I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
It's Touche time here on The Download on 720 WGN Radio. In studio with me, Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy, and they are prepared to argue about politics. That's what this is all about, guys. We decided instead of having sort of sustained discourse throughout the week, we would punch it into one Monday segment and let you guys just tear at it about all of the news that you've been simmering over.
We are ready. We are so
really,
in the mood to
really
touche
cute
tonight.
Dogs going by outside.
Woof.
There we go. I like the dogs.
Good start. Good start to the focus.
As they said in the candidate.
Oh, I see. So we're going to get.
They said in the candidate, but how do you like my dog? You remember that line? That was one of the greatest lines in that movie. But how do you like my dog?
All right, so
Redford says it's a nice dog.
All right, let's get right to it. The big news, we didn't get a chance to talk to, it was Friday, was the what happened in the UK, taken off from the European Union, and let's talk about American politics. Donald Trump was there in Scotland, put foot in mouth, continued to show what kind of presidential candidate he is after every big news item.
Where I think it was on the 14th hole he put his foot in his mouth. And I didn't realize that press conference he had was actually from the 14th hole. I'm like, can you demonstrate greater lack of interest in what's going on in the world and a greater lack of seriousness than having a press conference from the 14th hole while you're...
Was he playing?
No.
That would even be better.
No,
like,
it was a
hold on, let me talk
playing.
To the press. It was like a great Caddyshack, right? No.
He was not playing. No, it would be better, I think, if you were Hillary Clinton and you had badgered everybody in the UK to stay in, or Barack Obama, and you went over and threatened people
yes,
to stay in.
Every one of the millions of citizens were badgered.
And you ended up on the wrong side of the issue. That's why David wants to draw attention to, you know, Donald Trump being a successful businessman and going to one of his new developments.
Well, this
you're giving me serious confusion. You're for Trump. You're against Trump. You're for Trump. You're against Trump. Dude, pick a lane. Where are you coming down?
Anti-Hillary.
Yeah, that's a good lane. That's an express lane at this point. All right, so let's talk about this because there was. I mean,
yes.
Obviously the news started off, it felt like that night, it started off that this was a loss for Barack Obama and for Hillary Clinton and for Democrats who wanted the UK to stay in the EU. It turned into, look, once again, the Republican candidate has put his foot in his mouth, and how fun this is on social media to watch him stumble and fall. What is the what were the ramifications on both sides with the Brexit?
Honestly, I don't think there's very much ramification from a political standpoint in the United States, other than it reinforces the meme that Trump is not ready for prime time. I think that there's a larger issue, though, here, and that is the morning after the vote, all of a sudden, millions of people in the UK were having like a hangover. They woke up going like, I did what last night? There are 4 million signatures on a petition to have a revote. There are people who were interviewed who were saying mm-hmm. things like, oh, man, I voted for leave, but now I wish I hadn't. And the number one search on Google was, what is the EU? It's like, guys, the time to do that is before. And to me, there is a direct comparison to what's going on in the United States. The hangover people would have if they voted for Trump.
Oh, God. Talk about stretching. Okay. I want to be, you know, I'm going to own up to my age and say I remember distinctly 1979 when Margaret Thatcher won over all of the expectation that she would fall flat on her face. And, you know, she was not the darling of the media elite. She was a, you know, chemist, a female, a self-made person. And, of course, the entire New York Times, Boston, Washington corridor was aligned against her and said she would lose. And she won. And that presaged a certain sentiment. I mean, you come out of California in 78 with the Prop 13 and then to Margaret Thatcher in London and then to Ronald Reagan in 1980. In the same way, David, who represents the party of government, right? And government is going to solve this, and government's going to do that, and we have to have more taxes for more government, and more government will solve the problems. The government side of the equation profoundly lost in the Brexit vote. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to pick up every issue from the UK and it's going to resonate here in the United States. But in general, it's evocative
feeling, yeah.
of a feeling that things are out of control. Things are going in the wrong direction. You know, we got a right direction, wrong track split in this country that is decidedly against the Democrats and against the party of government. And that's exactly what you saw given voice to in the Brexit vote.
Dave?
Well, Chris is right. There are some common strains there. There's also a common strain of xenophobia. You can't. I have heard Chris, and I agree that there are issues with, you know, the UK being controlled by Brussels. But there also is the whole anti-immigrant fervor that was taking place over there. What's fascinating is that if you compare the Bernie voters and the Brexit voters, they're completely opposite. The young people in the UK voted overwhelmingly to stay in the European Union because they're sitting there going like, hey, I have a choice at 27
That's
countries.
That's the 24 who voted.
Oh, okay. Well, 65% of those 24, which would be, I think, about 18, actually voted to remain. But what's interesting is that, you know, Chris loves to talk about how, oh, this is a great thing because they stood up against the bureaucrats and Brussels and the lack of representative government and so on. That's fine. But now what? Because what looks like it's going to happen is that the entire UK is going to disintegrate as well as aspects of Europe. And I think that what happened is that in Europe, people took 60 years of stability for granted. And now they're waking up having done this thing with the markets tanking. The Dow lost another 300 points today. That's 900 in 2 days. Global markets are panicking, going like, what's going to happen? Frankly, for the U.S. economy, it's probably not going to mean very much.
Right. They're not panicking. They're correcting. And they're correcting because, and I hate to say this because it shouldn't happen, but a lot of the investors go by mainstream media reporting and they had no sense. Everybody who I think was serious about watching the evolution of opinion in the United Kingdom was very well versed in the likelihood, not the possibility, but the likelihood that Leave would win. The investors, for a variety of reasons, and I think that's an interesting conversation in itself, which we won't get into tonight, investors got on the wrong side of that. And that's why they're correcting. But I agree with David that the unraveling of these big government structures, okay, is not easy. And there is unraveling, and there is going to be a bit of a mess in terms of unraveling this. But the UK was turned down. David Cameron himself personally, and we're way out of what American voters care about, but since we're here, David Cameron went to the EU in February and said, I have got to do this referendum. Give me some concessions. Make your activity responsible to the folks in my country who are getting derogation after derogation established against EU policies. The EU told him, no soap, go back to London, win your referendum, right, and just sit down and be quiet. We'll tell you what your opinion is.
Yeah, that was a big oops. David Cameron made just a catastrophic political miscalculation and assumed
The miscalculation was on the part of the EU. Cameron was doing the right thing. He understood the sentiment was against
the political
EU. And he went there and he said, you got to do something or you're going to lose. And they said, you're out of your mind. Go home and win the vote.
Fine. And it was the greatest political miscalculation calling for that referendum since the George W. Bush advocated for a vote in Gaza.
The guy would not have been prime minister at all. It was a very reasonable calculation because the Eurosceptic wing of the Conservative Party, which was joined, by the way, by the rank and file of the Labour Party in many voting districts throughout the country. It's a very interesting, non-traditional splitting up of the electorate. And that's another thing that's got to be watched very carefully relative to the evolution of November.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, we'll pick it up here on the second half, the other side of the break here. We'll continue.
Welcome
Touché.
To Masterpiece
we're
Radio.
We're going to get past Brexit here, and we're going to get a little closer to home. All right, stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what you said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
It's the download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. Touche! We're doing a little touche with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling.
I'm all right.
Hello, Chris. I don't think so.
As we're doing,
we're still stuck in masterpiece radio.
No, UK politics.
You don't want to sound like public radio. That's bad.
No, no, no.
We're not going there.
No.
Okay, Chris. We won't bother with that.
We won't. All right. Let's make a move here. Today we saw Hillary Clinton in Chicago, but before that we saw her in Ohio with a big rally with Senator Elizabeth Warren, piquing interest. And in, you know, the I forgot what I was reading, Washington Post or whatever, saying she's being vetted as a vice presidential candidate. I mean, what's the thought on the Democratic side of the aisle of Clinton and Warren being on the same side together, on the same stage?
Well, there are some folks who think that that's a fabulous idea. Many of them are on the Republican side of the aisle. because right now, Wall Street, just let's take Wall Street money. Wall Street money right now is staying away from Donald Trump in droves. You put Elizabeth Warren on the Democratic ticket, suddenly you've united Wall Street and Donald Trump in an interesting unholy alliance. Look, I watched the speech today in Ohio, or parts of the thing, and there's no doubt the dynamism, the energy, the excitement. Hillary Clinton has not seen crowds like that in this entire campaign. I mean, there was a buzz in the room, no doubt about it. And Elizabeth Warren can slice and dice Donald Trump like nobody's business, and clearly Hillary was enjoying it. That's not the same thing as saying I want this person to be my running mate and we'll do this for the next 4 or 8 years. I tend to doubt it. I think she does what, frankly, her husband did. She doubles down on her competitive advantage, which is stability and strength and experience, and she goes with somebody like Tim Kaine. I didn't like that idea at first because he's, frankly, really boring.
But he's the nicest guy in the world.
But don't you run the risk? I mean, don't you run the risk of being almost the opposite of a rock and roll sort of Barack Obama thing, and where Democrats, especially young Democrats, aren't interested in a Hillary Clinton, Tim Kaine ticket? I mean, doesn't Elizabeth Warren sort of get that Bernie Sanders vote out, that millennial that really is?
Yeah, what about that?
She does, but then you got to govern, and I think that there's a real question. Look, I like listening to Elizabeth Warren about 2/3 of the time, but she can get off on these rants about, you know, corporations being evil, and it can be a lot for the middle of the country to take.
Well, yeah,
I think that she would have at least as much of a chance of alienating segments of the electorate.
That was the Democrat.
Jeez,
now the Republican.
I didn't know the filibuster rule had been lifted. All right, so Elizabeth Warren is, you know, sort of an attractive candidate. I'm just saying that as a female, but she's got a lot going for her, except for her ideology, which comes first, last, always. And it is extremely left wing, and it is extremely hostile to what I think 97, 98, or maybe even 99% of the Americans understand to be, you know, the correct ordering of American society. She truly believes that corporations are nearly immoral and have to be corralled and regulated to, you know, the nth degree. She has no faith in the average board of directors, the average CEO, the average middle management. She doesn't buy it. And she is an extremist. And that is not going to help Hillary Clinton
maybe
get
so,
to the middle.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, come on.
Well, look, who's out there farther? Sherrod Brown? I don't know who you would find. You say, well,
she's not. Look,
she's a left-wing maniac.
Look, establishing the Financial Responsibility Board, that brainchild of hers, was a fantastic thing she did.
Wall
Street does need to be reined in. There is a need to regulate corporations. Corporations cannot just be allowed to be free reign.
But you're forgetting all of the stuff about responsible government. You see, this is exactly where the EU ended up. That consumer finance board that she created is virtually unaccountable to the American people because it's got its own source of funding. Even with the elections, the people are appointed, the head of that agency is appointed for a term that goes beyond a given president. And so
the point, though, the point being that it's not political, that it's
I'm sorry, the point of American government is that it is responsible to voters. on a regular basis.
Except when Chris doesn't want them to be responsible to voters
not true.
On a regular basis.
I think it should be responsible to voters on a clearly delineated regular basis. She doesn't.
Just
she
like the Congress is responsible to the voters and as a point allowed Barack Obama to have the eighth year of his presidency. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. Or that they didn't filibuster everything. Or that they didn't deny him the ability to appoint people. You are being selective in your outrage in this case.
If Obama understood the, you know, if he got a Merriam-Webster dictionary and opened up to C-O-M-P-R-I-S-E, perhaps he would. Perhaps he would begin to move in the direction of a Bill Clinton, who was able to learn from the voters at every one of the elections that took place during his presidency. And he's got the legislative achievements to show for it, which is the polar opposite of Barack. I know better than everybody else in this room.
Yeah, that whole health care for 20 million people. Ha, no achievement there.
All right, so let's go local. Let's finish up here. July 1st here, Friday, will mark. It's a big date in Illinois politics. It's now it's somehow a formality or more of like an anniversary holder. But it is a day that a budget's supposed to be in place. We'll be coming up on a year. Where are we with this? Because we're seeing a lot of mudslinging in the press. I saw that the GOP has taken out ads, you know, for the election. There continues to be a lot of talk in the media, but not a lot that's getting done.
Yeah, there is a they're having a meeting tomorrow. They're having a leaders meeting tomorrow. And then both the House and the Senate are in session on Wednesday. And the significance of July 1st is that it's the first day of our new fiscal year, which will be another year without a budget. You know, look, there are people who always want to blame. It's all Madigan's fault. It's all Madigan's fault. It's all Madigan's fault. The fact is, as Crane said this morning, you know, the governor has been unable to achieve anything by way of compromise with the Democrats.
That is untrue. The first person who would say that's untrue is Mike Madigan, and my reference, and everybody can go see it for themselves. Go to the City Club of Chicago website and take a look at Mike Madigan's recitation of the half dozen serious, significant legislative accomplishments that he and Bruce Rauner put together. It's not Dave Lundy, excuse me, not Chris Roebling. That's Mike Madigan, and he recites them with typical Madiganistan precision. Okay, so Cranes has got its head someplace it doesn't belong. All right, Cranes is, forget about Cranes. Let's talk about reality. I think you have to say, when you run, it's just like Obama. You run and you say, I want to be president. Well, then you have to be responsible. Now, Obama said, I don't have to be responsible because the guy who came before me was George Bush. That's not Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner is responsible for what Bruce Rauner has or has not done. And I don't think there's any question about that. But so too is Mike Madigan. And what guys, my friend Dave Lundy here, love for everybody to forget is that the Democrats had 12 years in which they controlled everything and they did nothing except reward their union backers, who are, in fact, the folks who call the tune for the Illinois Democratic Party, the party of government.
All right, Dave Lundy, I'm going to give you the last word here.
Yours was a
good word. Human malarkey detector here. I'm just going like, oh, my God, Chris.
Madigan is not controlled by the unions?
How deep are we?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. The first actual, look, everybody who's ever heard me knows I'm no fan of the former governor, Pat Quinn. But the reality is that Madigan and Cullerton and Quinn made the first real dent, not only in our unpaid bills. Right. Our fiscal house was getting in order. We were for the first time paying all of our pension payments. Chris likes to conveniently forget that fact, but now we're paying nothing. And Madigan, while he's had his issues and while he certainly was responsible for a lot of the what we're in today, along with 26 consecutive years of Republican governors, Madigan, though, somehow managed to do budgets.
Wait, 15, 16 years ago?
Somehow managed, actually it was 13 years ago, somehow managed to get budgets done with every single one of those Republican governors for 26 consecutive years, but somehow we can't get it done now. What has changed?
We've got a Republican governor who's standing up to the unions.
Cranes is talking about the Business publication of Chicago when they're in their lead editorial saying, Governor Rauner, you proved us wrong.
There it is. There's the...
Touche.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, our regular segment here on The Download. Touche on Monday night. See you next Monday, guys.
See ya.